This is Rossi, better known as Chef Rossi, owner and executive chef of The Raging Skillet, New York City's wildest catering company, if I do say so myself. And welcome once again to Raging and Eating, my podcast. And I started doing the podcast in the darkest days of COVID-19 when we were totally shut down and I was just kind of paying the bills by doing teeny little parties and feeding people in need and doing anything I could to keep from getting depressed and keep my staff from getting depressed. And so I thought, you know what, when we're busy again, I'm gonna just have no time and I'm gonna be, you know, just kicking myself about all the things that I could have done now when I had the time. So 2020, I didn't want it to be a wasted year. So yes, 95% of our business canceled or postponed or evaporated, dayenu. But I didn't want to get crazy busy and be like, if only I had done that when I had the time, if only I had done that. Now granted, I have some very good friends who use the shutdown to lock themselves up and watch Netflix and drink and, you know, why not? Listen, how often do you have a year off? Go ahead. Binge watch everything you want on Netflix and drink your brains out. Enjoy yourself, you know. But that wasn't what I wanted to do. Because I knew when I got busy, I was going to be like, if only, if only, if only. So one of my first if onlys was to try to start learning Spanish. Because, you know, in the food industry, it really is a handicap if you don't speak Spanish. So my friend Cece talked me into this app called Duolingo, and it's free, although if you get the free one, you have to kind of get harassed for advertising all the time. But, you know, what can I say? Same thing with other things, too, like Pandora. So what? You got to watch an ad or two? Whatever. Anyway, so I started learning a little bit of Spanish on Duolingo, and I've been doing that for, well, I guess since April of 2020, so it's like a year now, and I certainly don't speak Spanish, and I certainly can't hold my own in a conversation, but I can communicate a little bit better with my dishwasher and understand a little bit more what people are saying, especially if they're saying it behind my back, so hey. And also, I'm still doing it. 10 minutes a day, why not? This is not an advertisement for Duolingo. I'm talking about what I did in the shutdown. And the other thing I thought was, well, my friend Heather was always telling me, you should have a podcast, you should have a podcast. But who has the time or the know-how or the, you know, the extra brain cells? But now I did. Not the know-how, but I had the brain cells. I wasn't using them, so I started Raging and Eating. I think I started it in August of 2020. And so I kind of feel like looking back at the, let's call it the lost COVID year, I can say, well, you know what? At least I'm doing the podcast. And it fills me with joy and it fills a lot of other people with joy and is evidently helping a lot of people sleep at night, which, you know, maybe that's not a compliment that my podcast puts them to sleep, or maybe it is. It relaxes them and de-stresses them. And so, hey, whatever, dayenu, it's a good thing. The other thing I did in the shutdown, which I'm still doing, is I started to cook a lot of things that I don't normally cook. So I've been in business for 32 years. And at first, I had to do everything. I had to pay my dues. I had to chop the onions and chop the potatoes and dice the potatoes, peel the potatoes, whatever. I had great knife skills. And then I became the chef and I asked other people to do it. And then I became the owner of the catering company and the executive chef. And I asked the chef to do it. And the next thing you know, I would still go in like the Queen of England and make my sauces and my marinades, you know, the cushy jobs that everyone wants. But I certainly wasn't chopping the onions and peeling the potatoes, and I was not the one who was sautéing the chicken or stir-frying or whatever. And so with the shutdown, I had to do all of that, although thank God my sous chef Glory jumped in to help with the chopping and the peeling and even the washing of dishes because she's an awesome person. But It actually was a great liberating experience to do things that I hadn't really been doing for the last 2 decades. To kind of get my hands back in the dirty work. You know, when you're up there on the front table, like acting, well, maybe not acting, but feeling like the Queen of England, as you do your dips and your marinades, while everyone else is doing the grilling and the sautéing and the schlepping and the chopping and the dicing, you know, there is a little bit of a disconnect. So it was kind of a good thing to get back into it. And then the other thing I started doing during the shutdown was I started to do things that I really never would do. So I was never the dessert person. I always hired a pastry chef, and I always hired people who felt 1 + 1 = 2. So I was always terrible at math and science, and great at history and art and music and things where you can improvise. That's why I'm a cooker and not a baker. As a cooker, I make my sauce and I throw a handful and a smidge in and I play and I dance and I boogie and I change my recipe every time I make it. My poor sous chef was asking me to give her some of my recipes for my famous dips and sauces. And I said, you understand that I just made that differently than I've ever made it before because I get bored. What can I say? But with baking, you really have to behave yourself. So if 1 + 1 = 2, you better put in 2 tablespoons of flour. You can't mess around with it or it comes out like crap. One of the first jobs I ever had, well before I was a chef or the owner of a catering company, was I went out as one of the low-rung schleppers for a kosher caterer. I forgot the name of the caterer, but they were kind of snazzy as far as kosher catering goes. There's a lot of kosher caterers out there who are anything but snazzy. But these guys really were. Anyway, the problem was since they couldn't cook on Saturday, because that was the Sabbath, they had to do all their cooking on Sunday. So the party was like 6 o'clock at night. We had to get to the kitchen at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I have never been a morning person. I mean, it's death for me to get to work at 9 a.m., but 6 in the morning, forget it. And the owner and chef of the company said, we're going to make a wedding cake. You're what? Oh my God, that's way over my pay grade. He said, put everything on that list in the double boiler. I said, okay. So I ran and I put everything on the list on the double boiler and started to cook it and melt it down. You know, the double boiler sits over simmering water. It's like how you melt chocolate. You put the simmering water in a pot, you put a bowl over it, you put the chocolate in the bowl, and the chocolate melts. It's nice. So this is basically a larger version of that, this double boiler. So I put everything on the list in the double boiler, and it started melting down. I go, now what? He goes, and now we're going to make the icing. And I said, you said everything on the list. Well, everything on the list was the cake and the icing and the filling. I put it all in the double boiler, not everything on the list in the first paragraph. This is rule number one. Never ask Rossi to be at work at 6 in the morning and then tell her to bake a wedding cake. I mean, give me a break. Anyway, the end result was that we wound up serving a 1-layer wedding cake that was more of a wedding mousse. We decorated it with flowers and tried to disguise it, but listen, it is what it is. And it's sort of amazing that this caterer ever asked me to come back to work again. But it was also the last time I ever tried anything like that. So, no, I'm not a baker. And so all these years, I would always have other people doing the baking. Then I thought in the shutdown, you know, why should I be so reliant on pastry chefs? Because I've had some very moody prima donna pastry chefs over the years. And there's nothing worse than, you know, having to deal with a prima donna pastry chef, you know, where you can't tell them to bug off because you need what they're making. It's sort of like, it's not a very freeing feeling. So I thought, well, let me invent desserts that I can make, where you have a little wiggle room, where you can misbehave a little bit. And then the more items we have like that, the less I'll be reliant on pastry chefs. And no offense, pastry chefs, my hat is off to you, or my schmata is off to you. I mean, you are noble and you are good and you can add 1 + 1 and make it 2, so I really have to give it to you. But it was time for me to liberate myself from the balls and chains of, you know, owing to these pastry chefs. Anyway, so things I started doing, my tahini Rice Krispie treats. They are so good, and you can play around with them a little bit, and they're still great, and they're vegan, and they're gluten-free. And I know I've given you this recipe at least once, if not twice. But basically, you take a quart of Rice Krispies, and you dump it in a bowl, and you mix in a couple of smidgens of black sesame seeds and a little pinch of salt. And then in a pot on the stove, you put a cup of tahini and, let's say, like a third of a cup of agave and 6 tablespoons of brown sugar. Sometimes I give it more agave. It depends on my mood. And you cook it just over low heat, just until it's super hot and the brown sugar is melted. And then you toss that up with your Rice Krispies really well. Meanwhile, you have a baking pan with parchment paper that you've totally sprayed down with cooking spray. You press all your tahini agave Rice Krispie goop in that pan. You put another piece of parchment paper over it, and then you get a rolling pin, or I sometimes use a big number 10 can. That's just a big old heavy can. And roll it, roll it, roll it, roll in, roll in, roll in, until you get it flattened out totally. So the big heavy can works really well for me, better than the rolling pin. And then the important thing is just leave it alone, because if you try to cut it up, it'll still be soft and fall apart. It's not pretty. So leave it alone for like an hour or two, even a few hours, who cares? And then when you're ready, you cut it into these little pieces. I like little squares or triangles, and you put it in a pan, and you seal it up until you're ready to eat it. And that gets better the longer it waits. It's even like a week later, it's even better. It gets harder the longer it waits. And I think I'd add it 2 weeks later. It was a little too hard, but a week later is great. And now I had a dessert that I could make without a pastry chef. I was ecstatic, but I wanted more. I was insatiable. So I threw in my mixing machine, which I had never really used, only the pastry chef had. I threw in about a cup of peanut butter and an egg and some brown sugar. And that was all I threw in. A little drizzle of molasses, but I didn't have to. Turned it on, let it mix, 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 mix. And then I put dollops of this on parchment paper, on sheet pans, and shoved it in the oven at 350 for about 7 minutes. And out came very soft peanut butter cookies that would fall apart if you lifted them up. But when they cooled off, they firmed up beautifully. They froze beautifully. And they were perfect and easy. And I even started poking in some dark chocolate chips into them too, which was even more gorgeous. So you see, there was another dessert I didn't need my pastry chef for. So in the shutdown, I started to try and learn Spanish. I started my podcast. I forced myself to cook things that made me very uncomfortable, mostly desserts. I started to do jobs in the kitchen, including being dishwasher and prep cook that I never normally did. It really just kind of broke out of my mold. Now, I'm not saying that there is a right or a wrong for what to do in COVID, but I think using the shutdown to just do something you wouldn't normally do to challenge yourself in a way that you wouldn't normally challenge yourself is very rewarding. And now here we are. We're in June. I catered my first big wedding back in May. It was fantastic. And we just had our first big double wedding weekend. We had a wedding on Friday, which was fantastic. And we just catered a wedding last night on Sunday. And normally, I'd be like, no big deal. 2 weddings in a weekend. I'm a pro. 32 years of doing this. Whatever. It was a big deal. We were really out of practice. Physically, mentally, emotionally. But we pulled it off. I mean, I have to say, today, my feet are killing me, my knees are killing me, my wrists are killing me, my eyes are killing me. My maitre d' was half dead by the end of the night. My chef, Ron, looked like he was going to pass out. My sous chef, Glory, was like half dead. Half the waiters were having back pains and knee pains. I mean, we were all out of practice. And there were stairs to go back and forth. Party was on the 11th floor, the ceremony was on the roof, the party back to the 11th floor, back to the roof for dessert. Schlepping and hauling and chopping and dicing. And listen, It's a hard job when you're used to doing it every day, but when you have been out of practice for a year, very hard. And in the middle of it all, I thought to myself, thank God I started my podcast. And thank God I did all those cool cooking things in my downtime. And thank God I started to learn Spanish. And I did some writing that I'm really grateful for, because in March and April and May, and even in June, but mostly March, April, and May of 2020, it was scary and dark and lonely and weird. And I spent a lot of time walking along the East River, sometimes for 10, 11, 12 miles, and thinking and writing about it, writing about what it was like to walk through Wall Street on rush hour and be the only person on the street, no cars, no people, writing about what it's like to see the birds and the nature and the flowers exploding everywhere because nobody was trampling them or harassing them because people were staying home, so Mother Nature was celebrating. And I'm so grateful that something in me forced me to write about it and document the time. Because now we're starting to forget. Today I walked around Stuytown, Stuyvesant Town in New York City. I love it there. I have a big giant fountain. And I used to spend a lot of time in the shutdown staring at that fountain and being mesmerized by it and being the only person sitting there. And tonight I sat there and there were a lot of other people sitting around that fountain. And I realized that I was starting to think of those dark days of COVID as a distant memory. And something popped up on Facebook of the time we spent feeding people in need 1 year ago. This is what you were doing. And it seemed like something that happened 20 years ago or yesterday, depending on my mood. But thank God I documented it so that I could constantly go back to it. And I guess what I'm saying, and I'm digressing all over the place, is that when bad things happen, there really is something good, or there should be, that you pull out of it. Okay, you lose a loved one that dies, there's nothing good you can pull out of it, but you could cherish their memories, you could grow from it, become deeper and better and kinder and more generous. Maybe you could pull that from it. We were all on lockdown and shutdown with COVID. Our jobs closed, our favorite restaurants closed, our life closed. We had to wear masks. We couldn't hug anyone. And yeah, okay, some people just kind of, like I said, binge-watched Netflix and ate too much and drank too much, and that's okay, why not? But some people got closer with their children or started projects they never would have started. My friend Jose has three children. I guess they were all, I think, two twin girls who were four and his little boy who was six, I think, when COVID started, something like that. He was in the apartment with all three of them. They all had school canceled. They were three high-energy little kids, and it could have just been a disaster. It could have been a traumatizing year of screaming children and Jose losing his mind. So instead, he decided to find a really creative way to keep them entertained and keep himself from going nuts. And so he started making videos and putting them up on TikTok. Now, Jose was a talented party planner. And actually, I catered his wedding with his very wonderful husband, Tim, who very sadly passed away. And that's a very sad story. And it's not mine to tell, but if you ever meet Jose, if he wants to share it, he will. But he wound up with three kids and no husband. And there he was in the shutdown with no school. The kids could have gone mental. He could have gone mental. And instead, he started making these videos on TikTok. And they were hysterical. He had them lip syncing Mildred Pierce. He had them doing dance routines. I mean, you name it. And these kids had the most entertaining shutdown of any kids you're going to meet during the lockdown. They were thoroughly, thoroughly entertained, and they were all acting in these hysterical videos. And the next thing you know, Jose and his children have become a sensation on TikTok. And I think he's now getting jobs advertising for different companies, and he's become a host for a show about parenting and or children or something on social media. I don't know. It just keeps going. And so he's actually made a career out of it and become a sensation, and the children love it. And that's, you know, what could have been a really terrible, disastrous, painful year for that family. It became a wondrous, laughing, fun year. And they're all TikTok stars. So I don't know. Is there a moral to the story? Well, I guess it's just like, look for the silver lining if you can. Sometimes in the worst moments, I mean, I know I had some really dark moments. We all did. But seeing my business shut down like that really broke my heart. And walking into my kitchen empty and alone, I felt like she, my kitchen is a she, was abandoned. And I used to just go in and pet her and wipe her down with Fantastic. And just, I don't know, it was really painful. But then when I started cooking and researching, and especially when we started feeding people in need, and I brought in people who love me and who I love, and we started cranking up the music, we wound up making ourselves feel so much better and making a whole lot of other people feel so much better. I just got a beautiful message recently from someone who benefited from our Cooking in Need mission and also joined our group to dance and sing in the kitchen and cook with us. And he said, thank you for saving my life during the shutdown. You really helped me get through it. And that message made it all worthwhile. It just changed my universe. So I ask you, whose life are you saving right now? And I mean rescuing someone from a burning building. I mean a kindness that you're giving out to someone who really needs it. I mean, you would not believe how a kind word can change someone's universe. Good friend of mine who I've known really almost my entire life since I was 13 years old, which of course was only, you know, a decade ago, said something about how the power of a few words can change a person's reality. And I forget exactly how she put it, but I responded to her something I felt very strongly in that moment, because she's always been a spiritual person, but I think she was blocked for a while with corporate America and all the things that can block you. And now she's become liberated. And in this COVID-19, her spirit is flying high. She's become so spiritual and so liberated. And she seems younger and healthier. And she's fantastic. And so I said, I'm proud of you. I am proud of you. And I felt it so strongly. And I know she did. I know those words went right to her heart where I wanted them to be. So this is a shout out to you, Starlight, if you're listening, because you really are a starlight. And I love what you did to your hair. Talk about Starlight. My God, blonde bombshell. Woohoo. I'm hoping she'll listen to this. She's a busy girl because she's liberated and shining, you know, being liberated and shining takes a lot of time and energy, but it's worth it because you're putting all that goodness into the world. So, what nice thing could you do for someone today or tonight or tomorrow? And what fantastic thing could you do that's not a normal thing for you to do? What are you afraid of? Something you're afraid of is a good thing to tackle. I was terrified to do desserts and baking because I just can't do the 1 + 1 = 2. And so instead, I came up with a bunch of desserts where I could play with. And ultimately, I actually made some cookies where 1 + 1 = 2. I made some chocolate chip cookies where I had to behave myself, couldn't really improvise too much, and I was bored out of my mind. But you know what? They came out great, and they were delicious, and I don't want to do them again, but I did it. You know, it's no fun for me if you can't improvise. But still, it's not good to be afraid of things, so just do it. Just do it. So now in our big wedding weekend, we've been making some fantastic food. On Friday night, at a very high-end, beautiful wedding in Brooklyn, as an entree at this posh sit-down dinner, darling, where you might expect to have filet mignon and a 3 peppercorn crust, au poivre, darling. Instead, we had fried chicken and waffles with hot maple. And a hot maple two ways, hot because it was hot from being heated up, and hot because it was hot with a heaping dose of hot sauce in the maple. And that was crazy good.
Can you imagine being at this posh affair and then digging into some fried chicken and waffles? Yeah, baby. And last night, for a fantastic bride who was so cool, she was a former bartender. She was hanging out in the kitchen with Charmani and me and the kitchen staff and Cece and Glory and Ron. She was so gorgeous and so great and so human and awesome. She just wanted to hang out with us. Well, I wanted to give her the food of her dreams because she's just been so great. When the COVID shutdown first happened, we couldn't get a mask anywhere, and I told her that on the phone. And she had someone making masks for her, and she shipped me like 36 masks. I mean, you could not get a mask. This is March of 2020. She shipped me 36 handmade masks, and so that was great. Anyway, for her, we did a floating supper, my famous floating supper, with lots of fantastic hors d'oeuvres. A Mexican market corn, where we grilled corn in olive oil, salt, and pepper. Then we cut it into hors d'oeuvre-sized pieces and skewered it. And I made a spicy mayo. We dipped the corn in the mayo, and then we dipped it in grated queso blanco and Parmesan, and then sprinkled it with a little lime-flavored chili. And oh my God, what a gorgeous hors d'oeuvre. I mean, really sick hors d'oeuvres. And for the floating supper, they had a vegan gluten-free pad thai as the first wave. And then I did a chicken shawarma, an Israeli-style grilled chicken, with an Israeli salad and harissa tahini sauce as the second wave. And for the third wave, I did a beautiful Spanish rice, like a paella rice, with churrasco grilled flank steak and chimichurri sauce. I mean, this was pig out heaven. And we ended it, of course, with my famous Oreo crack and chocolate dipped strawberries, which I did not dip because we all know that I'm traumatized still by having to dip 3,000 strawberries in chocolate when I first started out. That's in my book, The Raging Skillet, that whole story. And if you haven't read my book, get out there and get the book. Come on, what are you waiting for? And it's also a hit play that's traveling around the country. If you want to know about all my exploits, you can always find me on my Facebook page, which is Chef Rossi NYC, C-H-E-F-R-O-S-S-I-N-Y-C, all one word. And I'm also Chef Rossi NYC, all one word, on Instagram. So now you have two places you can find me. And you can find me on Twitter, where I am Chef Rossi. So in case you miss me in between podcasts. So what I would say to you is go out there and break out of the mold. You know, do something you're afraid of. And also be really nice to someone. Say something great to someone. Eat something beautiful. Share your kindness. Share your words. Words are powerful. And above all, love yourself. This is Rossi, better known as Chef Rossi, for Raging and Eating. And remember, food is love, and so are you.